Get the buzz and be seen at chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. Now, welcome to Today's Business with Sharon Hill on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Today's Business, 1360 WCHL. This is Sharon Hill. I'm talking today with Kristen Heemstra. Kristen, tell us about your business, The Art of Potential.
Oh, Sharon, I would so love to tell you about my business. It is so good to see you. I have a business. Yes, it is called Art of Potential. And my business focuses on three things. Getting hired. I teach people how to master the hiring process so that they can really move around in the marketplace as they want to. I also work on getting inspired. That's my next theme. And with that, I really work with clients to help them figure out what it is they want to do, what their life passion is, and to create a pathway for them to get there. And then a lot of my business is focused on college admissions help. Many people know I work at East Chapel Hill High School as a guidance counselor. I've also worked at Chapel Hill High School as a guidance counselor. I've had a business doing this, and then prior to that, I worked in the D.C. area doing college counseling. So I have a whole breadth of experience I bring in that arena as well. So my business really is workshops and seminars and private coaching.
Love it. And let's start with the first one. You said getting hired.
Yep.
Kristen, let's talk about getting hired. What do people expect from you, and what do you offer people when it comes to getting hired specifically?
Well, let me give you a little bit of background. When I graduated from Carolina back in 87.
Go Heels.
Yes, go Heels. No, I didn't. I graduated from Chapel Hill High in 87. I graduated from Carolina in 91, and I moved to D.C. And I had it in my mind that because I had a degree from a great university, that there would be lots of interest in bringing me on board as an employee, and I was very wrong about that. And so I learned that there's an actual whole process that one needs to go through to find work, particularly when moving into a new area, not having a network to rely upon, and a lot of things that need to happen. And I didn't have that background, nor did I know I needed it. So when I work with clients to get hired, I work on so many different things. First of all, I help them understand where the opportunities are, because networking is so key for anyone who wants to find work. We know statistically 70% of all jobs come from networks, but it's not the immediate network. It's not me, Kristen, talking to Sharon and Sharon hiring me as much as it is one person removed. So it's me talking to you, Sharon, and then you talking to your friend Jim, and then Jim making the hire of me. So it's one, sometimes even two removed. So understanding that process and then initiating it, trying to have an elevator pitch ready so that when you and I are talking, I can tell you a little bit about what it is I want to do, and so that it sticks in your mind and you think, oh my gosh, I can't wait to try to connect her with people, as opposed to, oh, that's going to be a rough one for her to get hired. And you know, and I know, we've seen those situations.
Oh, yeah.
So I work a lot with clients on that, helping them get their elevator pitch honed, developing a resume. I have a particular resume style. It's on my website, artofpotential.com. I really like it because of the way it's visually laid out. And the rule of thumb is something you pay attention to, which means that anything above the thumb line is what people see. And so I hit that resume. It's a high-impact resume so that all of your qualifications are bulleted at the very top of the resume. So it's visually stimulating to the person. And then there's tricks. You use the language in the job description to bullet those points so that the person looking at the resume immediately can place you in that job, which is so very important. Keeping in mind, of course, a resume is not going to get you a job, but it's just one more tool to help them to see you in that job.
Right.
I help clients craft cover letters is a big thing, even though having hired many people myself, I typically didn't read them. I'm sure that there are lots of employers out there who read them, though. So we work very hard at just doing a cover letter. Again, I use the bullet points. I think they're visually interesting. They make it easy to say things and to get attention drawn to that. So that's another thing that I do.
I like that term you use, above the thumb line. Yep. I hadn't heard that. So when a person's holding a piece of paper, that which is above their thumbs is what they focus.
Right. And you get an average of 30 seconds view on your resume. And what people don't realize is if you actually sit down and stare at something for 30 seconds, you can pretty much find every single typo on a piece of paper. You may not remember anything it said, but you will remember the typos. And I've seen some gorgeous resumes. I worked in downtown D.C. for a long time at a communications firm, and I had more resumes than you can imagine. And some of them were professionally printed, which this is in the early 90s, so it's not like people had color printers. These people actually went to a printer, and they would have logos put on them. And I just one I remember so well, it had the logos of the main television stations, because we were a television operation.
Okay.
And so it had the logos of ABC, NBC, or whatever, but then there was a typo on it. So all of that work down the drain, because that's what I remember, in addition to having really cool logos. But that was enough for me to say this person isn't going to be a good fit.
Got to focus on the important things.
Right.
Kristen, you're talking about paper resumes. Is it true in the workplace these days a lot of folks go onto the web to find more information? They go to the people's Facebook. They go to LinkedIn.
Oh, Lord, yes.
They read the recommendations as more ammunition.
They do. Absolutely. And you bring up two really good things. The Facebook, first of all, people are going to Google a person's name. So if you're out there looking for work, make sure when your name is Googled, assuming that it's you that comes up, you know, you don't know how many Sharon Hills or Kristen Heemstras are going to come up, and there's some of that you can't control. But if it's your name, what's going to come up with your profile? What types of information are going to be given? If they hit the images section, what images are coming up? That's another big one. But the LinkedIn is an interesting one, because I have had clients get hired through LinkedIn. People who have been found through LinkedIn, it's a tool that we are seeing employers use quite a bit of.
Yes.
And to your point, it is a place where people can leave recommendations about what you do. And now that you're saying that, I, who do this all the time, I'm thinking, wow, I should get more recommendations out there. But it is. It's a great place to advertise your business as well.
Right. The value of having positive words about you and no
Absolutely.
Naughty pictures and things like ringtones right. that are inappropriate. Those are some of the subtle things as well that can torpedo a person
yeah.
trying to get a job.
It really can.
Got it. So that's in terms of getting hired. Kristen, do you do one-on-ones and workshops, or is most of your work one-on-one?
Actually, I'm moving more to a workshop model. I really prefer it, because there's something about working with a group of people who are all looking for work, where you automatically build a really nice community. And you can get feedback, and you can do a lot of interview preparation and practice with somebody who is invested in how you're doing. So I'm doing a lot more workshops these days.
A lot more workshops.
Yep.
Kristen, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
The best thing to do is go to artofpotential.com. I also have a radio show, Sharon. Dun, dun, dun.
Amazing.
Yes, I have a radio show here on 1360 WCHL. You can go to that website, and you can hear a lot of the radio that I'm doing is related to career information, and there is advice on that as well. But artofpotential.com, you can always call me. I'll give my cell number. It is 919-360-7957. And give me a call, or you can go to my website and find out when the workshops
Say
are.
Say that one more time in case
Absolutely.
Somebody wrote it down.
919-360-7957.
Got it. Thank you. And Kristen, when you're giving your talks, either groups or one-on-one, I assume it's groups, where do you mostly talk? Who brings you in, or do you have to set it up and people come to you? Do you go to them, or they come to you?
Both. I do free seminars, Sharon, for businesses, and that I'll be at SAS here shortly. I've done a lot of work actually out at SAS Corporation. The talk I'm giving in the next month or so is on how to help your child get a job, because there's so many young people graduating from college right now who are moving home, and that dynamic is being created of parents loving their child but not necessarily wanting them so close to them. So we'll be talking about 20 tips to help your child get out into the workplace. So those types of talks are free. I talk at churches. I do a lot of work with churches. I've been invested in ecumenical community.
Ecumenical
community.
Okay.
In Chapel Hill. My dad was a minister for a long time in the area, so Presbyterian minister. So there's that. I talk to groups, nonprofit groups. I will come in and talk to women's groups, for example, or at the chamber I'll do talks on leadership. And that's a great thing. If you have an organization that would like a speaker, I'm happy to come speak too.
And you will speak for free.
I will speak for free.
See, that's everybody's favorite price,
Kristen.
I will not
do a full workshop for free, but I will speak for free. And a talk is generally an hour.
So you give them just a taste of what they can expect to have them salivate over. We have to hear more.
Yes. Yeah, but I get more than a taste. I mean, if I'm going to come out there, you're gonna leave with something.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We're talking to Kristen Heemstra from Art of Potential. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more and learn more about her fabulous life. We'll be right back.
Get a kick when you click at chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, back to today's business with Sharon Hill on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
We're talking with Kristen Heemstra, Art of Potential. Kristen, during our last segment, you talked about what you do for teaching people how to get hired. There's so many tips, and I'm sure we've only touched the tip of the iceberg and all you have to say about that topic.
Oh, I could go on.
On and on. Maybe we'll get some more in our last segment. But let's get on to your second point about your business, and that is getting inspired.
Yeah.
You teach people or train people or work with people to get inspired. Tell us what that means.
Well, this is very close to my heart. It really is. And this is kind of the genesis of the name of my organization, Art of Potential. I think that people, when they find their stride or when they find what they're passionate about, it brings together a whole different life for them. They're congruent. Their personal and professional passions mix together, and you just see a much happier person who isn't grinding out the day. Having been through a process where I didn't know what I wanted to do and took a very long journey to figure out what it is, I don't ever want anyone to have to go through that process again. So a lot of the work that I do is helping people understand what their story is and gleaning from it the guideposts that are there, that have been there to show them where they need to go. And it can be, just to give you an example, Sharon, I did a show with Elizabeth Dearborn Davis for my own radio show.
Yes.
And she found her call while reading The Economist magazine. It was on Rwandan genocide.
Oh, my goodness.
And she moved to Rwanda, and she's become part of the healing process. We all have these things that inspire us, but we don't necessarily pay enough attention to them. So a lot of the work that I do is working on that. Probably the most important aspect of the work I do with the inspiration piece is helping people take control of the process. There is something called locus of control, and I won't bore you with all the psychobabble around it, but basically what you're trying to determine is where control is coming from. A person with an internal locus of control sees themselves as impacting the world. A person with an external locus of control sees the world as impacting them.
Okay.
It's very important that that becomes internalized for someone to maximize their life or to reach their potential. Part of that has to deal with understanding the landscape you're navigating. So a lot of the first part of that particular workshop is understanding what expectations you have that you may not even know you have. So, for example, if I have the expectation that my husband will mow the lawn and he does not, the question is not, is there a right or a wrong? The question is, what's the expectation and what's my reaction to it? Because when we have expectations that we may not even be aware of, and they're not being met, we can see bitterness, depression, some real negative things. But if we move away and say, you know what, I have that expectation, I'm not sure that's fair, it's certainly not communicated, then we can move into a different emotional state, which a lot of times we find ourselves in gratitude. That was so great that he mowed the lawn. I didn't have that expectation.
Yes.
So there's a lot of that type of processing that happens at the beginning of that workshop or the Get Inspired work that I do. And then once you get through that, then you can really move into what are your muses, what amuses you, what's in your mind. The word muse actually is where we see memory, mind, music, all those things that do eventually tweak our inspiration. And then the final piece I work with people on is persisting. And my favorite story about this is Beethoven. Do you remember Ode to Joy?
Ode to Joy
is probably the most popular song in the world. It's played at every wedding. I think it might actually even be Germany's national theme. He wrote it when he was deaf. And that, to me, just really talks about finding that inspiration and making it happen no matter what. I mean, how do you write music when you're deaf?
When you're deaf, just think about it. Yes.
He didn't even hear them play it. They had to turn him around after they had played it for the first time so he could see the people standing up and applauding. So you
what
really,
a story.
Yeah, it's just, but that, I think, people have that capacity within them. I think we see glimpses of it. I am much more fortunate than many because I work with high school students all day, and it's still pretty raw there, and it's still pretty on top of things. So I get to actually be around that energy quite frequently. But finding that own energy for yourself, that's really what your inspiration point is. And it takes work to get there. I do use career tools. I do use the Myers-Briggs. I use a strong interest inventory. But really what gleans the most information is the personal story a person has.
There we are. You mentioned the woman with the read The Economist and got her aha moment.
Yeah.
When did you have your aha moment that says this is the path you want to take to help others get inspired?
I didn't have one aha moment. I had a lot of moments realizing I was in the wrong thing. There are two ways you can make a decision. One is to be pulled somewhere. One is to be pushed.
Yes.
And in my situation, I would have jobs that people would drool over, making lots of money, working with some really high-powered people in the D.C. area. And I would just not be happy coming home and just feeling like I wasn't doing what I needed to be doing. So there was a conflict there. There was a chafe there. And that's not unusual. I see that a lot with my own clients. I had a doctor contact me, a pretty high power doctor, the other day. And he's like, you know, just not feeling it. It's not working for me. And so then you take that experience and you say, okay, what do I want to move closer to? You never, ever discount your own experience, because that's what made you who you are.
Yes.
So you always honor that and you always bring that with you into the next phase. And so in my particular case, the human resources aspect, I really liked. Working with clients, I really liked. The content wasn't there. And so just in terms of my own professional career growth, my spiritual growth, what did I want to go back to school and study? All those things came together, and that's how I ended up where I am now.
I'm amazed by the fact that when we first talked about you're getting hired, teaching people how to get hired, you're teaching people how to get the jobs.
Yep.
But now I'm talking about getting inspired. I hear you saving a lot of relationships.
Yeah.
Over and above getting a job, saving a relationship.
Yeah, and the primary relationship, Sharon, is always with yourself. And that's a big part of getting inspired is self-leadership. You know, that there's that quote, leader of one, leader of many. If you can't lead one, you can't lead any. And I see that time and time again. Good Lord, look at our, you know, our politics.
Politics, yeah.
Yeah, but when you are congruent with yourself, when you look at yourself in the mirror and you don't shy away, or it's okay, and you think, you know what, I'm a good person, I'm doing good things, and you're okay with yourself and you're moving forward, that's really when you start tapping into what your capacity is. And I do have a deep spiritual belief that God wants us to be everything we can be, that it doesn't do God any good if we walk around feeling terrible about ourselves and the world. And
woe
everything.
Is me, woe
yeah,
is me.
I don't think that. I think it's much more of a go out and get them. You know, that's just kind of my attitude. You know, I've got it, I'm on it, here I go. So that's a lot of what that piece is about for me.
And the beauty is you're practicing what you preach.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to see you as an example, you're bright, you're happy, you're chirpy, you see the bright side of things, the glass is half full, I can imagine.
On most days, without coffee, nothing is half full. I'll just say that.
So there is a caveat about coffee, and there we are.
I do have an addiction issue, but I'm okay.
What is your educational background to be able to do this?
I went to UNC and declared, I think, 5 different majors, eventually studied anthropology, which is beautiful because I could study all of them. People fascinate me. Cultures fascinate me. So it actually ended up being a great major for me, really not good to go out in the marketplace with because no one's hiring anthropologists.
Good
Put
point.
It on out there. They're not.
Good point. Oh, my.
But I did end up getting a lot of background in being able to understand the lens through which to look at human interaction. So that was a great thing. I went back to school and got a master's degree in counseling. And I'm qualified to work in community colleges, which I'm very passionate about as well, and high schools. And I work in high schools now and absolutely love that. I also have a certificate from Duke University in human resources. So have that piece as well.
I'd say that qualifies you for this business, girlfriend. Very, very good. Oh, my goodness. So your education was, you said UNC, so you got a UNC background
yes.
and a Duke background.
Yeah, I'm still more with the Tar Heels.
That's a
sorry,
good answer.
Duke.
That's a good answer.
Sorry.
Sing that you're in Chapel Hill. That's a good point. Oh, my goodness. Well, I think the passion that you're demonstrating helps drive your business and help drives your passion. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, your passion helps drive that business and keeps it going.
Yeah.
Let's take another break for just a couple of seconds because I want to understand when we come back about the third aspect you mentioned. Your business is how to get into college.
Yes.
And I'm assuming there you work with high school kids to help them get into college.
And even younger. Yes,
and even younger. When we come back from our break, let's talk about getting into college.
Wonderful.
This is Sharon Hill. I'm talking to Kristen Heemstra. This is 1360 Today's Business. We'll be right back.
Get a kick when you click at chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, back to Today's Business with Sharon Hill on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
We're talking with Kristen Heemstra. And so far, she's told us in her business how she practices teaching people in workshops and one-on-ones how to get hired, the secrets of getting hired. She also talks about getting inspired, which goes into relationship building. Let's go into the third section, Kristen, getting into college. Tell us what your business focuses on to help people, kids, get into college.
Well, Sharon, this is a particular area that Chapel Hill is very, very concerned about. We are an educated community. College education is an expectation here. And the rules have changed a lot. The school systems have changed. The kids are working a lot harder than they ever had to when I was going through and when you were going through. And it seems for the same reward that we were able to attain. So there's that piece of it. When I work with families, when I work with kids, when I do workshops, the main focus is, first of all, helping people understand that colleges are businesses. That is one thing that no one should ever forget, regardless of whether it's a state university or a private institution, colleges are businesses. Then I help people understand what the admissions pie looks like, if you will. And the pie looks very different than people think. You know, when you go, college is one of those unique situations where they advertise a certain persona or a certain image, if you will. But then when you break it down, it looks very differently. So, for example, if you think of a pie, there's different slivers which focus on different things. So you might say one sliver might be focused on athletics. So you bring in rowers. I mean, I've seen kids get in for some really rowers, wrestlers. You know,
rowers?
Oh, yes, especially the Ivies. They like people that row.
Of course.
And different sports that people aren't even thinking about. You know, you see kids recruited for field hockey, lacrosse, of course, and then, you know, but people a lot of times think of the big name like basketball and football. But really, that piece of pie is pretty significant, and it goes across the board. It's non-gender specific, and the sports, the diving, that's another big one that you see kids recruited for.
So are you saying kids can get scholarships in these sports areas?
They can get scholarships as part of it, but I'm talking about just pure admissions right now. Get admitted to the university because all of these coaches have a certain amount of slots where they can admit people to get into the school so that they can be on their team. And the admissions that these folks are subjected to, they're not getting in with nothing. Let's be clear about that. They do have to meet the criteria for the university's admission standard.
All right.
And they do have to, depending on the school, have to get through the admissions process. And it can be quite difficult. For example, I was talking to a recruiter she coached field hockey for Wake Forest, and she was trying to recruit a girl from Durham Academy. And part of Wake Forest is you need to be in the top 50% of your class. Well, this girl wasn't in the top 50% of her class, but you know what? She was a very good student. And like Durham Academy is a very competitive school, as is East Chapel Hill High School, as is some of these. So you hear these stories about really great students, but not being in the top 50% of your class, so not being able to recruit for that.
Okay.
So I just want to make that clear. So sports is one slice of the pie, getting back to our pie. Then you have a diversity section. And a lot of times people think of diversity as just being a color factor or an ethnic background. It's so much more than that. I've seen, for example, Williams College released a video of their recruiting or admissions table process discussion, and they admitted a student because he worked at a farming store in Oklahoma, and that was so diverse for them and so different than anything they had.
A farming store?
Yes. So he was Williams is a Northeastern college. It's a very highbrow school, wonderful school. Not a lot of farmers.
So that made him different, which made him diverse.
Right. So you have socioeconomic in addition to all the other types of diversity. So that's another. But you also do have your ethnic backgrounds making up a difference there.
Okay.
So that's another slice of the pie that's being done. Then you have your band leader. And I will admit that I had from a guy from Middlebury College come down recruiting, and he said to every place he went, are there any oboe players here? Really, really interested in oboe players. Now, Middlebury is a small school who is trying to put together wonderful music, a wonderful school, by the way, but really, you know, you can tell very concentrated on their music program. You're not going to see a Duke going out and doing anything like that.
Right, right.
That's
okay,
not gonna
I
be,
hear you.
That's not going to be their thing. But the smaller schools pay attention to stuff like that. So they're then recruiting for specialized programs as well. So you've got the sports, but you also have the music, and you have singing. Students will get recruited for that. I had a student, Ole Miss, threw money at just desperate to have her come down. So you have those pieces of the pie. Then you also have the donor piece. And, you know, if you've got some money and you're making some donations, then that can really help you. And the office that takes care of the money, they also will get some pull in the admissions practices. So as you can see, as I'm talking about this, that pie that was advertised
Yes.
is now getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And so the actual amount, and it varies from school to school, but I will tell you, for example, the Ivy Leagues, which is always interesting to me, about 50% of their incoming classes, between 40 and 50%, are coming from private schools. So that's kind of an interesting piece to put into play, because most students in the nation go to public schools. Uh-huh. So now you've just using Ivy's, for example, you've just made that piece of the pie really small. And when I did my interviews with the Ivy League admissions folks, basically what I learned is for the entire Raleigh, Durham, Cary, Chapel Hill area, they're only going to accept 6 students. And that's, you're looking at Cary Academy, Durham Academy, you know, all the Enloe. I mean, you've got great high schools out there in addition to East and Chapel Hill and all that. But they're only really accepting 6
now,
students.
Now, clear this up for me. Who is accepting the 6 students?
I'm talking about just pure Ivy League schools.
Ivy League schools.
Yes.
Now. When you say 6, do you mean each school?
No.
You mean all the Ivy League schools?
Okay. Very good point of clarification. In general, Yale will accept 6 students from this area.
I see.
Brown will accept 6 students from this area.
I see. All right. Okay. 6.
The interesting part is a lot of the students are applying. We'll get into both. That's a different issue.
Yes.
But anyway, it's just a really what I'm, the point I'm trying to make is it's a very small piece of the pie those particular things, in those particular schools, which actually students have access to because the rest of the pie is taken up by other things. So what I do in my workshops is I help kids to market themselves, to understand what the market is. Now, it's Duke, amazing admissions for this area, very committed to North Carolina. And of course, our state schools are absolutely committed to this area. We have one of the best state school programs in the nation, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. But when you are putting together your application, you've got to worry about GPA.
Right.
GPA is calculated in North Carolina in a unique way. We heavily weight our classes, which definitely impacts the class rank. And that's something I walk kids through so that they understand it. You need to have your activities presented in a way that they're tangible, acceptable, and make an impact for the admissions person. So that's another thing we spend a lot of time doing. Schools that require essays, it is a great way to showcase yourself or a great way to really not make an impression.
Yes.
And so I work a lot with kids on essays and making sure that their voice is the one coming through. Parents, you should not be writing your children's essays.
Oh.
I'm just going to say that.
Just trying to help. We'll talk about
that
some more.
But you know what? A 50-year-old parent sounds so much different than an 18-year-old child.
Yes, yes.
And that's a very hard place to be. I will just tell you, for the child as well as in my role, because you can see it. But anyway. The main thing I really do with folks is to help them understand how the process works and then to develop their own marketing strategy for it. And when I say marketing strategy, it sounds very businessy.
Very corporate.
Yes. Yeah, it's really not. It's really just showcasing the student in a way and in a light that the school can then say, this child will be a perfect fit because.
Kristen, let's stop on that point right now and take our break. But when we come back, I want to hear more. Please continue with that discussion of how you're helping the students, because you're giving us some facts that I think no one knows but you. So you're listening to 1360 WCHL, Today's Business. This is Sharon Hill talking with Kristen Heemstra. We'll be right back.
Get a kick when you click at chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, back to Today's Business with Sharon Hill on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
I'm talking with Kristen Heemstra, who's talking about her work in getting kids into college. Kristen, when we left off in the last episode, you were saying, giving us so many factors that kids need to be aware of, yeah, be able to sell themselves in the school. One of the components was GPA. Let's go into some other components. What about SAT? What about student loans? Can you help them understand that process as well, especially the student loans?
Yeah, I definitely can. The SAT, Sharon, is so vital to college admissions, and it is something that I talk about a lot on my show, Art of Potential, just because it is so important. SAT scores matter. They matter a great deal. College admissions people have personally told me they will look at GPAs that are less than what they would normally take if they see high SAT scores with them.
Okay.
And those are the kids that they're more likely to waitlist than to automatically reject. Now, they do not say those are the kids that they're likely to admit, because they want their admits to come in with both the GPA and the SAT score. The important thing to realize about the SAT score is that it's a bar. It sets the bar across the nation so that you know a student who has a 4.0 in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and a 4.0 is roughly equivalent, let's say, to a 1,400 SAT score, which is a very high SAT score.
Right.
That's just the verbal and math being in the 700s. And a student who has a 4.0 in Nashville, Tennessee, let's say, if they also are scoring a 1,400, then you know that the education for both of those kids is roughly equivalent. If you see a student coming out of a different area with the same GPA and a much lower SAT score, you know that the preparation program wasn't necessarily rigorous.
Okay.
So that's why it's used. It's important to understand why it is the way that it is. It's actually not so different than the state standardized tests, the EOCs and the EOGs, which any parent who's been in the state is familiar with those. But it's just to give some standardization to the process. So that's an important thing to understand.
Right.
But colleges, particularly competitive colleges, have to have a way to cut through thousands of applicants in the snap of a finger. And the SAT scores give them that.
That's
because
that little trigger.
A lot of the GPA, a lot of the transcripts, the course selections, all that kind of stuff, they look the same. So that's just a quick and dirty way to do it.
Got it.
So that's one thing. And for that, honestly, I don't do SAT prep. There are a lot of preparation programs in this area. And we know, not necessarily, I don't know which ones are the best, but I do know that an SAT prep program does make a difference. We do have research which indicates that. Not necessarily that one is better than the other, but that taking an SAT preparation program definitely helps the process. So there's that. In terms of money, which is really what the student loan question is getting to, It's an interesting question because there are schools that are need blind. And need blind means that they are not going to pay any attention to whether you can afford to come to the school or not. They are going to accept you, and then you can take out the loans. If you want to take out the loans, that's up to you. Now, with the economy, we saw some need blind schools quietly not being need blind anymore. I mean, they weren't out there advertising it. But they weren't denying the fact that they were no longer need blind either.
And that's NEED, need blind?
Yeah, need blind. Okay. How much money do you need from us to come to school here? Or how much in your loans do you need? And I will tell you, I did have a very unique situation where I called a very elite school about a student who really wanted to go to school there. And in a very unguarded moment, the first question out of the person's mouth was, well, can she afford it?
There we are.
And I was like, ooh, that's interesting, you know, because you're not advertising that on your website, but that's something that you're paying attention to. We also know, okay, so you can take out loans that you can pay back. That is definitely one way that kids can go to school, is they can take out loans or parents can take out loans. You know, that's completely up to the person. You have to be careful with grants and make sure grants aren't actually loans in disguise. Our state legislature is really good about trying to name things as to what they are.
Yes.
So the one thing that isn't quite named that way is teaching fellows, which is actually a loan. They pay for your college, and then you pay them back four years of teaching. But for the most part, that's pretty straightforward. You do want to be careful about owing a lot of money when you come out of school. We do not have any statistics or research which says going to a state school is going to ensure that you have a less or more than future than going to a private school. We don't have any research like that. We don't even have going to ECU is better or worse than going to UNC or anything like that. So when it comes to the actual bang for your buck, it's really up to you what experience you're looking for. It's kind of like designer clothes. If you want designer clothes, go for it. If you don't care if you're looking at Walmart, go for it. Because in the end, what's it going to matter? It depends. You know, it depends what you're trying to project and where you're going with that.
And that's the advice that you give to the students,
absolutely.
Keep things in track. Let me do a quick switch on you with the time we have left. I know that you are very, very much involved in the community.
I am.
Please tell the audience what you're doing in the community that's helping Chapel Hill.
Let me just start by telling you how I got to the community. So I came to the community in 82. It was right after the Tar Heels had won the NCAA tournament, and I came from Chicago and didn't know what that was.
Oh, dear.
I was in middle school.
Oh, dear.
It was a Catholic neighborhood, and we didn't really have any colleges nearby. So when I arrived to Chapel Hill, and right on my front street, there was a big blue painted Tar Heel. Didn't really know what that was about. So that's my admission. But I went to Phillips. I went to Chapel Hill High. And then I went to Hope College in Holland, Michigan, where my family had settled and been and everyone had gone. And that's where I met my husband, Hans Heemstra, who teaches at East Chapel Hill High as well. And then moved to D.C. Or no, then after Hope, I went to UNC because that was a little bit of too much of a culture shift for me, to be honest. And it's really cold, just in case anyone is wondering. Sky is not
Michigan.
Carolina blue in Holland, Michigan.
So
came back here, graduated from UNC, moved up to D.C. and spent over a decade in that area. After 9/11, decided that for family reasons, wanted to be closer to home. Two children myself. And so that's what brought us back to this area because I love growing up here, love the whole experience. And I work at East Chapel Hill High School.
Yes.
So I am thoroughly in the community.
Yes.
And then I've done programs around the community. I did a lot of them with the Chamber, Chapel Hill Chamber of Commerce.
Of which you're a member.
Yes, of which I'm a member. Mm-hmm. Love the Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Big shout out to them. Did programs over at University Presbyterian Church. Did the Get Hired workshop for the folks over there. Had just a really successful time. So with the community, my volunteer stuff, in addition to giving my blood to the high school, I also do a lot of things around seminars and things like that for folks.
Got it. So clearly, very, very active. Mm-hmm. I'm going to switch up on you again because I understand, because I've read it, you have a book that is waiting to be born. Tell us about your wonderful book.
It's just waiting to be born to the marketplace.
That's it. Waiting to be born to the marketplace.
Yes, I am looking for a publisher. I do. I have a great book on how to get hired, and it's really a complete from A to Z explanation of the hiring process. Demystifies it. It's perfect for the person who's new to the market coming in, regardless of age, regardless of education background, really, really not geared toward the 100K professional looking to move it up a notch because they already know how to play that game. They're playing a different game. But for the college student, for the person who's new to the U.S., for the woman who's going back into the market, or the, you know, stay-at-home dad who's looking to go back in the market, that's really the target market. And I do expect to have it out on shelves hopefully next year. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
It is such a wonderful book. I wish everyone could have it in their hands today, Kristen. My goodness.
It's good.
We have about 30 seconds left. Very quickly, tell us what you've discovered about generational differences.
Well, Sharon, this came from you, our conversation. If you don't know, Sharon, and I don't know if you've done, okay, well, Sharon is an ex-IBMer, and she, too, has worked in the corporate environment. And in some of our conversations, we really realized that the folks coming into the marketplace just don't have the education they need to be successful. They're so smart. They're so talented. They've got so much to offer. But yet there's that finishing step that's needed that colleges aren't providing. And so she and I have worked together, and we've got a really dynamic workshop that we're doing that will be coming out soon. But to your point, there's a lot of generational differences, Sharon, and learning how to talk the language of the younger folks. It's a different language than more mature folks like us are used to.
I'm going to have you come back so we can go more into that discussion because the audience needs to hear about it.
Yeah.
Kristen, thank you so much for talking to me today. We could go on for hours.
Right. We do sometimes.
You've been listening to 1360 WCHL. Today's Business, this is Sharon Hill. I've been talking to Kristen Heemstra. Thank you so much for listening.